This is Residents in a Room, an official podcast of the American Society of Anesthesiologists, where we go behind the scenes to explore the world from the point of view of anesthesiology residents. This episode is sponsored by ASMG, a physician-only, privately-owned practice group serving the San Diego area. The ASA thanks ASMG for their support.
The reason why I want to go to the medical school.
At least for me, appreciate what I'm doing.
That scares me.
So welcome to Residents in a Room, the ASA's podcast by residents for residents. I'm Dr. Zed, a CA2 resident at Tufts Medical Center, and I'm here with some fellow residents.
Hi, my name is Joe. I'm a CA2 from Beth Israel Deaconess.
My name is Ricky. I'm a CA3 resident from Massachusetts General Hospital.
My name is Wei Chen. I'm a CA1 resident from Tufts Medical Center.
So today we're going to jump right into the subject of practice settings and career paths. So first, let's flesh out our options. What types of practice settings have you heard about?
So I think our best known area of where we spend most of our time is a hospital setting or inpatient setting. But we also, as anesthesiologists and trainees, we go to outpatient settings like pain clinics and also different areas in the hospital. So,
you know, a big breaking point is academia versus private practice, right? And I think the challenges, not the challenges, but the different types of practice settings or groups that come with each of those, you know, if you're in the OR setting specifically.
Yeah, I think when you're a trainee, because you tend to be in academia, since those are the settings that host trainees, it's pretty rare to know like very much about private practices, but then most anesthesiologists are employed in private practices. So what types of settings are you all considering?
I plan to stay in academia. I like the thought, at least immediately post-fellowship, of working at a big academic center where you have potentially lots more resources. I don't want to make a blanket statement and say you can't have lots of resources at a large private practice, but I think academia is attractive to lots of people for the reasons that you were just saying. You know, it's what we're used to. So it kind of, I think, would help to ease the transition into practice a little easier.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm kind of torn between what I'm going to do. I think I do want to do a fellowship, also possibly pediatrics too. But after that, I don't know where I want to end up. I think I do want to go to some sort of academic practice in the future at some point, but I don't know if I, right after fellowship, want to do that. So maybe have a couple years of experience with private practice under my belt and then go back to academics.
Yeah, I kind of have the same opinion as Joe. I want to go to a private practice. I want to do a fellowship, but after that, probably going to go to a private practice because I feel like I got so many years of trainings, or even in the medical school, I studied in those big academic centers. I really want to have some experience in private practice to see like how to work very efficiently, as I heard from my attendings, and how I can perform like with limited resources and, you know, take care of things myself.
And I think too, it depends if you are pursuing a fellowship. It definitely depends on what fellowship you're pursuing. If you're pursuing ICU, for example, you're a little, I don't want to say you're limited, because it's not that you're limited, but as an intensive care trained anesthesiologist, you don't have necessarily quite the same practice opportunities that an internal medicine trained intensivist would. I mean, I'm not saying it's right, wrong, good or bad, but the academic centers tend to employ more intensive care unit anesthesiologists because that's how it historically has been done.
That's true. I kind of like, for fellowship wise, I'm still like thinking about what I'm going to do. I'm a CA1, so I still have time.
You've got time.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, so I'm thinking about maybe one pathway is going to be like pain, because I'm going to work in a clinic and it's like designed for like a private practice, something like that. I'm not pretty sure about that, but pain is definitely one of my target subspecialties. And the other thing is like regional, because I really like doing procedures. So if I work in for regional, maybe I can work in academic or private practice. I'm not pretty sure about it.
I think that's what attracts a lot of people to chronic pain specifically. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in having kind of a dual practice, you know, something that Joe mentioned earlier, outpatient versus inpatient setting, you can, that's kind of the only opportunity that as anesthesiologists, I think we have to have a big presence in the outpatient world.
Yeah, and I think people like the idea of pain too, like you were saying, is you get a little diversity. I hear some people that feel over time once they get through residency, they say, oh, well, I like the OR, but I don't want to do that all the time for the rest of my life. I want some variability, like we were just speaking about, you know. So it gives you not only that to kind of change your location where you practice and what you do, but you also get to get a little continuity of care that we don't necessarily get as often as anesthesiologists.
They have touched upon this, but what have you heard about the pros and cons of different practice settings, small, big, and academic?
One that immediately comes to mind is call burden specifically. If you're in a small private practice where you're one of 7 or 8 anesthesiologists, you're sharing that call among 7 or 8 anesthesiologists, which obviously means that it's going to be a little more frequent than if you're in a large academic center where you're sharing that call among 30, 40, maybe even more potentially anesthesiologists. So one that specifically comes to mind for me is that. And I guess that's a pro or con depending on how you think of it. Mm-hmm. If you're taking more or less call, to me it would be a pro to take less call.
I think for most people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the minimal of better.
I don't know. Everybody's different. But that's one that immediately comes to mind. And I think the academic places tend to employ more people. And as a result, the call pool is a little more diluted.
Yeah. I think also what is another important factor is kind of what you want in the future. You know, obviously, if you're thinking of doing research or something in that vein, you know, private practice, you can do it, but it's not really, it's not as beneficial for you, I'd say, or as good of a choice, I think, because academics is really where I feel like you would flourish if you wanted that, because you have the research labs, you have the clinical staff to help you, the research staff. So you can kind of mix that in with it. But also, if you're into education and teaching the future generation of anesthesiologists, I think academics is more beneficial for that too.
What I really care about after like so many years of training is about money as well. I really want to higher salaries. This is one of my thing. So private practice, you take more calls, and meaning you can't probably earn more.
At least in my mind, the way I think of it, combination of both of those. I recently rotated at one of our local VA hospitals, and I think that gets forgotten a lot, but it was very much a private practice feel on a day-to-day basis, but they were also very academic, publishing, researching. And I think that, as I mentioned, that I think, at least for me, that gets forgotten a lot, but it's kind of a way, I think, to mesh the two, like what you guys were talking about together. Mm-hmm.
We have that flexibility to kind of switch the setting we practice in, depending on what we do too in the field. So I think that's really nice too. So you can always go back and forth. You know, sometimes it's easier said than done, but it's possible. And I think that's kind of a nice part of anesthesia as well.
Especially because we're not carrying an office full of patients that we have to.
True. Yeah.
I don't want to say dismiss, but basically dismiss if we were to change.
Yeah.
Practice settings.
Yeah.
Well, let's compare notes about common perceptions, good and bad. We've touched a lot upon the difference between private practices and academic centers. I think there are also kind of other subsets as well, like a surgery center, which would be a private practice, but is like a very specific locale in which to provide anesthesia, or like an endoscopy center.
Yeah, at least at my program, and I don't want to speak for you guys as well, but we don't get a lot of exposure to that. And I think it falls along the lines of something that was said earlier about the private practice world is, I don't want to say totally foreign, but foreign-ish, at least to me personally, just because we don't get a whole lot of exposure to that. And I think, you know, based on what you were saying, that tends to be where you see practice in endoscopy centers or surgery centers more. But it would definitely fit more along a private practice model.
I think those settings also are a lot about efficiency. It's also about patient safety too, obviously, like any setting, but it's really about how efficient we can be, how profitable we can be, how much we can get done in a day. And I think that as an anesthesiologist, obviously I don't have much experience either with it, but what I've been told by attendants that I've worked with is who used to do that is it's really, you get good at learning how to master your craft, but also do it safely and get everybody done in a day that you need to. And I think that's kind of, like you said, a skill that we don't necessarily get in residency. To an effect, but not to be that efficient until you really get out there. And if that's what you want to do, you got to kind of learn that skill.
Building off of what Joe was saying, where do these perceptions you all have about practices come from, and where exactly are you getting your information from?
I get most of these information from attending, actually. These days I try to, because I'm like thinking about fellowship, which is a next year thing, and I also, like, job is like basically 2 to 3 years later, and I try to Google some information, but it's not easy. You can find some information on LinkedIn or even on New England Journal of Medicine or something, career, their web pages, but I don't have a systemic view about things when I try to Google it. So most of these perceptions are coming from my friends or my seniors or attendings.
Yeah, definitely word of mouth. I think there's a lot of potential for an individual sharing his or her opinions and that kind of shaping what your perception is about a certain practice or practice setting, which may or may not be true, especially since there's such a wide variety of different types of private practice and different types of academic centers and different types of even jobs within academic centers. So it's hard to kind of grasp the entirety of those options until you actually do it.
Yeah, can't really add much more to that, honestly. I think it definitely is word of mouth. Like we were talking earlier, it's definitely attendants that have been in these settings before that you work with that tell you about it. Also, prior residents, like your colleagues that have either graduated and got jobs or done fellowships or worked at other hospital settings that are different from where you worked, or different types of settings that really you just talk to and get a description from, or where they tell you the good and bad, what they like about it, how it changes kind of your perception of these settings in general, for better or worse. But
well, I don't know about you guys, but I've heard a few horror stories about different practice settings. What are your greatest fears as you think forward to your next career steps?
I think one of the things I always worry about is being in a practice that's, one, not only questionable in what they do in terms of their practice, and then also for patient safety, too. So I worry about, walking into a place and thinking everything is going to be great and it's going to work out great, and then you get into it, you realize, once you get in the real nitty-gritty of it, it's not really what you expected, and then either there's bad outcomes, or you don't have the equipment or tools necessary to provide effective anesthetic to someone in a safe manner. And that's what I worry about. And then something happened, obviously, to a patient, which would be really unfortunate. So that's what I'm always thinking about. But
particularly in the private practice setting, if you were to get into a situation where, as the new person, you're that new person who I think I would personally be afraid of my time not being as respected as the more senior individuals in the group. I'm not saying that I think that this is something that happens regularly, but I could see that being a potential snag and causing lots of stress. So that's something that would worry me. And I think I shouldn't just say private practice, because I think that can happen anywhere.
I'm like at the beginning of my residency training. For me, although I think like I'm going to be a good anesthesiologist in future, but I'm still concerned if 3 years of residency is gonna be good enough to train me to be like comfortable to like independently take care of a patient in the OR. So my concern is, am I gonna be okay the first day I'm doing independent practice?
For me in particular, I don't have much experience with being in a supervisory role. So when I end up being an attending, it's very likely that I'll have to oversee residents or oversee CRNAs or AAs or something like that. And we do have like some electives in our final year to teach us more about that, but I don't think it's exactly like the actual experience. So I think there are many ways in which that could go wrong for me. Either someone not listening to me or me not being able to like troubleshoot an issue that they have. Because it always seems like now, like if you can't get an A-line or you can't get an ID or something, somehow your attending is able to do it. And there's a possibility that I actually might not be able to do it.
That makes me very nervous. You're that person that is being called. And there have been very few times in my short career doing this where I have called an attending and he or she hasn't been able to do what I wasn't able to do. And I'm thinking, man, in, for me, 10 months, am I going to be able to do all these things? Yeah. And I'd like to think that I am, but that scares me. Yeah.
And I think speaking of that too, I feel like a lot of us, you go through residency and you learn kind of how you like to do things. In practice, like I like to set up things this way, or I like to, I don't know, do this or have this in the room. Whereas someone else might see that and say, no, I don't like this setup at all. Like I'm gonna do it my way. And a lot of attendants have told me that's one of the hardest things they've had to actually accept over time is when they're dealing with trainees or CRNAs or who what have you. You have to kind of take a step back and not be overbearing to the point where you're making people or forcing people to do things your way. You want to let them flourish and learn their own intricacies that they like. But you also, like we were talking, you have to feel comfortable enough that if they don't have something or something goes wrong, you're ready and you can easily troubleshoot it or solve it quickly, even though it's not how you have things arranged. So I definitely have thought about that too. And I think that's going to be a very hard skill for me, definitely, because I'm very particular about how I like things too. So
it's tough. Exactly what you said. I've found it tough, you know, now progressing to my CA3 year where, you know, we have the opportunity as well to participate in some supervisory-like roles, obviously under the supervision of an attending anesthesiologist, but of our junior residents. And there are certain circumstances where you see a junior resident doing X, Y, or Z, and you're thinking exactly what you said. I would do it differently, but you want to let them learn to do it the way that they want to do it. And you also want to teach, but you have to foster independence. And then obviously above all of that comes patient safety. So it can be a tricky, you know, thing to navigate. Yeah.
Okay, let's get more positive. Any dream stories that you want to share? Stories of residents finding their perfect match situation that you've heard and perhaps covet? I can start with a story. One of our graduating seniors last year went into a pain management fellowship, but I think he actually got a job within 2 months, like into his pain management fellowship. And so he's working at an eye and ear clinic, and they don't do any overnight emergencies because they're very close to a major hospital. So all of the emergencies kind of go there. So he doesn't really take call because he's not like employed by the major hospital. He's employed by the eye and ear clinic. So it's very like 9 to 5, and he's like very happy about this.
I think I might know the major hospital that you're talking about that is covering those emergencies. little inside joke for the Boston folks here.
They were all thinking. not to name names or locations, but I think a lot of people, at least in my program, have been very happy with what they've gotten for jobs or fellowships. I think it's just, you know, they put in a lot of hard work over the years, and they really knew what they wanted to go for, what they liked, and it really set out to get that. And I think it was, not that it was easy, but they were successful, and I think they're all happy. Like, I haven't met a single person from my program that's like, oh man, I didn't get what I wanted, or I didn't get the job I wanted, or the location I wanted to live. I think it all worked out. But, you know, it's not to say that it came easy. They had to really, really work hard over the years to get where we were, like we all did.
But it is fellowship season right now, and at least I know I personally am grappling with the decision of what fellowship to ultimately pursue, and if I want to do a combined fellowship, which will be 2 more years, or just 1 year and just like call it quits, or if I even want to do fellowship at all, or maybe like pursue it like later down the line. So if you guys could all tell me a little bit more about sort of how you ultimately ended up choosing a fellowship or the field that you wanted to go into, and what decisions kind of came into play with that.
Well, I personally, and I think this is what attracts a lot of people to pediatric anesthesia, I like the variety that comes with pediatrics. You know, you could take care of any human being from the time that they are born, from the time that they die. And I think that that's a really nice, unique skill set. I was fortunate enough to get exposure to pediatrics early on in my training through Mass General. We do pediatrics at Mass General. And I was also lucky enough to rotate through Boston Children's. So to see two different, very different types of pediatric settings. So I just very much enjoyed it. I toyed with the idea of ICU for a little while, but I found myself going back to the pediatric OR, and the skill set it provides, I found that to be more enjoyable. And I just like working with kids too. I think it's very fun.
Yeah.
Is that what you felt too?
Yeah, so I was completely on the fence. I went through all of, you know, my life making easy decisions for me, at least. Like, you know, I wanted to go to undergrad, I wanted to do pre-med, I wanted to go to medical school, and then I found anesthesia pretty soon afterward in medical school. So it was always like a easy decision for me, but recently I was like really torn about what I wanted to do. I was on the fence too about a couple of things. There was subspecialties in anesthesia that I knew I didn't like, but there wasn't one that was really pulling me one way or another. But then I fortunately also went to Boston Children's this past summer, and I really liked it. And even in med school, a couple of my mentors in the past were pediatric trained, so I always kind of had that realm about me that I really enjoyed, but it really fostered it there. I like the complexity of it. I like that you can take care of any patient. And like you said, it's just nice to see the kids, mm-hmm. and the families are so appreciative, and it really makes you, at least for me, appreciate what I'm doing. And it's just humbles, it just makes you more humble about kind of the whole field in general, what you're doing. So I really liked it. So I've just decided on it about a couple weeks ago, actually, so pretty recently, so.
I love procedures very well. I did my surgical internship, and I kind of like, even when I was in the medical school, one of the reasons why I chose anesthesia, because it's a very good combination of like both the medicine thing and some procedures. That's kind of like fostered me towards subspecialties like pain or like regional. But I'm not sure, because I haven't done any of these rotations yet. Like cardiac and ICU are so fun because there are so many physiology and, you know, patients so sick in ICU, which kind of like remind me of the reason why I want to go to medical school, kind of like to save more people, like make medicine better, something like that. There are so many unknown things in medicine. I can still find something I want to dig deeper and try to make it better. So even I'm doing pain or regional, something like that, I can still make myself happy about what I'm doing. So I will see.
And you'll see too, once you start doing more of these subspecialties, it'll make, at least for me, it either made sense or it didn't. There are certain rotations that I enjoyed coming to work a lot more than others. I always like going. I really like what I do. I'm not saying that there are days where I hated coming to work, but there were days where I was just happier. I was never unhappy taking care of kids. So I think that played a lot for me. And you'll see that as you start to progress and do more of the subspecialty training.
So at least for me with cardiac, I had a research mentor very early on who's also a cardiac anesthesiologist. So they sort of exposed me to how interesting it was very early on, and they're very passionate about that field, and that really rubs off on you, I think, when you're starting residency. So like I like learned echo very early on from this individual, and I thought that like kind of all of the devices in the cardiac OR were very cool. And I think a job where I would be able to read echoes part-time is actually very interesting to me, because that's kind of a skill unique to cardiac anesthesiologists that like not that many other people have, other than like a few cardiologists. And there's so much demand for knowing more about like structural heart disease and different types of heart disease in our population, so you feel like very useful. And then it seems like cardiac and ICU like really go together because there are so many patients on these devices like ECMO or LVADs and things like that. And you don't really learn about that unless you kind of take care of those patients in the unit. So kind of why I thought about doing both.
That's such a unique skill set, such a cool skill set to be able to have, to take care of all those different patients. I'm on cardiac right now, and it's not, I'm impressed by all of the people that I work with, but I'm particularly impressed by the cardiac ICU folks. They're brilliant, for lack of a better way to put it. Their grasp and knowledge of physiology is like no other physician I have personally ever interacted with.
They certainly don't feel comfortable taking care of children, but I think they should probably take care of anything
else. Neonatal physiology is pretty cool, too.
This was like a very good discussion about fellowship. I know that at our residency program in particular, they really encourage people to pursue a fellowship, although not everyone ends up doing that, just to sort of give yourself an extra specialization when you go out into the job market. So this is really great. It was great to hear about all the different considerations you have choosing a fellowship from what you know about the different practice options that are out there. So I really want to thank you for coming here today and talking about these topics with us.
Applications for the ASA Anesthesiology Policy Research Rotation in Public Affairs, known as the Resident Scholar Program, are now open through February 14th. This is a unique opportunity for 2020 through 2021 CA3 residents and fellows to spend 4 weeks in Washington, D.C. advocating for the specialty and experiencing firsthand the political, legislative, and regulatory factors that affect the delivery of patient care. For more information and to apply, please visit asahq.org/resident scholar. Take it from me, I'm Dr. Kenesha Muse, a previous ASA resident scholar. During this experience, which was my favorite of residency, I worked on projects such as surprise medical bills, the perioperative surgical home, and the opioid epidemic, just to name a few. But most importantly, I met with numerous legislators conveying the importance of anesthesiologists. Apply today and become an ASA resident scholar.
Join us for Residents in a Room, where we'll share timely info, advice, and resources designed to help residents succeed in residency and beyond. Find us wherever you get your podcasts or visit asahq.org/podcasts for more.